Salzburg, Austria, 1759. Mozart by the ocean. Sometimes a day comes along that seems possessed by a certain shade of magic. You know those moments. There is a peculiar pattern to the silhouettes of leaves quivering against the sunbeam on the floor. The dust in the air glows white, charmed. Your voice is a note suspended in the breeze. The sounds outside your window seem very far away, songs of another world, and you imagine that this is the moment just before something unusual happens. Perhaps it is happening right now. My day of magic arrived on a bright autumn morning when the poplar trees swayed against a golden city. I had recently turned 8 years old. My brother, Wolfgang, was not yet 4. I was still playing through my exercises when Papa came through the door with Herr Schachtner at his side, the two of them discussing some matter or other about the Archbishop, their hair blown wispy from the bustle of the Geiteldegasse, the city's main thoroughfare on which our home stood. I paused in the middle of my arpeggios and folded my hands in my lap. Even now, I can remember the uneven stitching of my blue petticoat, my white hands against black clavier keys, the skeleton leaves clinging to Herr Schachtner's shoulders. His voice had been steeped in something rich and baritone. The scent of the street, wind and smoke and baked bread, lingered like a perfume on his coat. My lips were rosy and dry. My hair stayed neatly curled behind my neck in loose, dark waves, held back with pins. I was still too young to fuss over my appearance, so my mother had left me in a simple state. Herr Schachtner! My mother's voice sweetened with surprise at the sound of men in the room. She said this as if we were not expecting him at all, the esteemed court trumpeter of Salzburg, as if we had not planned everything in advance for his visit. Such talk of the Archbishop and the orchestra, it's no wonder you and my husband are always tired. Sebastian, she added, nodding at our manservant. The hare's coat and hat? Sebastian hung up the court trumpeter's belongings. They were finely made, velvet and crusted with gold lining, his hat made of beaver pelt and trimmed with lace. Beside them, my father's coat appeared worn, the threads thin at the elbows. My eyes wandered to the hem of my mother's dress. It was fraying, the color dull. We were the look of a family forever on the edge of respectable. My father was too busy with our guest to pay me any mind, but Mama noticed the stiffness in my posture and the paleness of my cheeks. She gave me an encouraging glance as she passed me. "Steady, little one," she had said to me earlier in the morning. "You have practiced hard for this. Do not be nervous." I kept her words in mind and tried to loosen my shoulders. But Papa had timed their arrival a bit too early this morning. I had only played my scales so far. My fingers had not yet shaken the cold from their tips, and when I pressed down on the keys, they still felt as if they were somewhere far away. My brother stayed mercifully out of sight today, hiding somewhere in our parents' bedroom, no doubt up to some mischief. I hoped he would remain quiet until Herr Schachtner left, or at least until I finished playing. The hare gave Mama a warm smile that crinkled the edges of his mouth and molded his face into a pleasant sight.
"Ah, Frau Mozart,"
he replied, winking at her as he kissed her hand.
"I always tell Leopold how lucky he is to have found the rare woman with a good ear."
My mother blushed and thanked him for his kind words. Her skirts glided against the floor as she curtsied. "I can only claim my gifted ear from my father," she told him. "He was a talented musician, you know." As she moved, I memorized the polite tilt of her head and the way she tucked a stray hair behind her ear. Somewhere in those movements must have been her true reaction to his statement. But her face remained as it always was, serene and secretive, sweet and mild. It was clear she pleased the hare, because his grin broadened.
"Yes, God has blessed me in many ways," my father said.
His smile was coiled as tightly as my nerves. His eyes flashed in my direction, hard and glittering.
Nonril inherits her good ear from her mother, as you'll soon see.
It was my unspoken cue. At my father's words, I rose obediently from my bench to greet our guest. Papa disliked it when I curtsied without stepping away from the clavier or let my gaze wander anywhere that was not the floor. He said it made visitors think me a distracted and careless young lady. I could not give Herr Schachtner any reason to find me rude. Serene and sweet. I thought of Mama and tried to imitate the way she had lowered her head. Just so. The demure way she had swept her skirts across the floor. Still, my curiosity stirred, and my eyes darted immediately to the court trumpeter's hands, searching for proof of musical talent in the way his fingers moved. Mama called for Sebastian to bring some coffee and tea, but Papa waved her off.
Later,
he said. It was best, perhaps, if the hare did not see our porcelain set. I pictured the old saucers with their small chips, the teapot's fading paint. Mama had begged him for a new one for proper company, but it had been ages since we had a reason to entertain such guests. Until today. Herr Schachtner brushed the leaves from the velvet of his justicore.
Thank you, Frau Mozart, but I will not stay long. I am here to listen to your lovely daughter's progress on the clavier. Johann followed me home after I mentioned Nonnerl's talents.
My father patted Herr Schachtner's shoulder.
He could not help himself.
What luck, Mama said. She arched a brow at me. You are just in time, then. Nonnerl happens to be in the middle of practicing. My hands trembled, and I pressed them together harder, trying to warm them. Today would be the first time I ever performed for an audience. My father had sat at the clavier with me for weeks as we prepared, studying my technique, slapping my wrists when I erred.
Music is the sound of God, Nonnerl,
he would say.
If given the talent, it means God has chosen you as an ambassador for his voice. Your music will be as if God has given you eternal life.
My father, God, there was little difference between them to me. A frown from Papa might as well have been a frown from heaven for what it did to my mood. Every night, I'd go to bed hearing the way my hands would move across the keys, the notes crisp in their perfection. I dreamed of how the hare would stand, clapping heartily, and how my father would sit back in his chair with a satisfied smile. I'd imagined the hare demanding I play before a wider audience, my father making the arrangements, coins filling our family's coffers, and the strain easing from his eyes. That was the reason behind everything this morning. Children my age, Papa said, could not play the clavier with the skill that I did. I was the miracle, chosen by a divine hand, destined to be noticed. If I could demonstrate this to Herr Schachtner, he could extend an invitation for me to perform before Herr Haydn, the most acclaimed composer in Austria. He would be my gateway to the royal courts of Europe, to the kings and queens. From my hands could sing the voice of God, worth its weight in gold.
Nonnerl, is it?
Herr Schachtner's voice addressed me. I nodded in his direction. My chest fluttered as if it were brimming with moths. My fingers twitched, eager to dance.
Yes, Herr,
I said. The last time he visited our home, he had not noticed me. But then he had no reason to.
How long has your papa instructed you on the clavier, Fräulein?
6 months, Herr.
And do you think you play well?
I hesitated. It was a tricky question. I did not want to speak too proudly so that he may think me arrogant, or too meekly so thus a poor player.
I don't know, Herr, I finally said. But I believe you will know best when you hear me.
He laughed, pleased, and I allowed myself a small smile in relief. Men, my mother had always advised, were incapable of resisting praise. If you needed something from them, you first told them about all the ways they impressed. When I chanced to look up at him, his smile widened, and he tugged at both sides of his justicore's collar.
"Well, what a charming girl, Leopold," he said to my father. "Delightfully reserved for her age. She'll marry well, I'll say."
I turned my eyes down again, forcing a smile at his compliment, even as my hands tensed against the fabric of my dress. I'd once heard a coachman call his mare delightfully reserved as he tightened her bridle. Papa turned to me.
"We learned a new minuet yesterday," he said. "Let's start with that, Nonril."
It was not a new minuet, truthfully, but one that Papa had written for me weeks ago, and that I had practiced for 10 days. But Herr Schachtner did not need to know that. So I said, "Yes, Papa," then sat back down at the clavier and reached for my notebook. In my nervousness, I started to play before I had counted to 3 in my head. "Careful," I scolded myself. Herr Schachtner would notice every mistake I made. I took a deep breath and let the world still around me. The slant of light in the air, the sound of my father's voice, the weight of a stranger's presence in the room, they faded now, leaving me with only my hands and the keys. Here, I was alone. This was my world. I began to play and my fingers steadied against the music. A major scale, a shift, a drawn-out A, another scale, a trill. I closed my eyes. In the darkness, with only myself, I searched for the pulse of the music and let my hands find it. It was like coming upon a web in the woods so fragile that a single puff of air would blow it away. I thought of the clouds right before they shifted. A butterfly on the underside of a leaf, velvet-white Edelweiss on a lonely rock, rain at midnight against the window panes. When I played, it was as if I were discovering the harmony of everything I already knew, but in a way that revealed itself only to me. My entire heart pulled with yearning at the music. I leaned into the web and let it encase me. Then, a bubble of laughter came from somewhere in my parents' bedchamber. The web around me wavered, threads of it starting to burn away to reveal the room again, the light and the stranger and my father. I furrowed my brows and tried to concentrate again, but from the corner of my eye, a blur of motion emerged from behind the bedroom door and ran over to where Papa sat. I caught sight of a head of warm brown curls, small, stout limbs, a bright smile that beckoned to everything around him. My brother, Wolfgang.
"Ah, Wolfril."
I heard the familiar affection in Papa's voice as he used my brother's pet name. Of course he did not scold him for the interruption.
"What are you so eager about? It will have to wait, do you see? Your sister is playing for us."
My brother simply smiled and lifted himself up onto the tips of his toes to whisper something into Herr Schachtner's ear. In spite of myself, I strained to hear what he said. My focus elsewhere, I felt my fingers speed up, disturbing the web in the woods and the flower on the rock. I bit my lip and forced myself back into rhythm. Herr Schachtner laughed loudly. He shared the joke with my father, who chuckled, and then said something in return to my brother. The music that filled my head began to fragment, and in the slots between the notes grew guesses at what they could be discussing.
"Look at the funny faces she makes. See how stiffly she sits. Her tempo is uneven."
Or, perhaps worse, they weren't talking about me at all. My hands stumbled over each other. I managed to catch this mistake before it ruined the piece, but one of my fingers still slipped off its key. The note came out silent, an ugly gap between rising arpeggios. Heat rushed to my cheeks. I cast a glance toward my audience to see my father's eyes dart at me, surprise and disapproval sharp on his face.
Herr Schachtner tucked one hand under each of Wolfril's underarms and picked him up to sit upon his lap. My brother's legs swung idly.
Thank you, Nunneral,
Papa said. His voice startled me. I hadn't even realized that the minuet was done, that my hands had already retreated to my lap. The web in the woods was gone. The clouds and butterflies and rain vanished from my mind. No one was listening to me anymore. I straightened and rose, trembling, from the bench to curtsy. The floor beneath me swayed in the sudden silence of the room. My father's smile swayed on artificial hinges. From where he sat on the hare's lap, Wolfril met my eyes with all the innocence of a little boy. His cheeks were round, still flushed from the remnants of a lingering fever that had struck just days ago. His eyes shone as brightly as pebbles winking in a stream. I softened at the angelic face of the brother I loved, even though I did not want to linger on his gaze.
Do not blame Wolfril, Papa would say later. He could not have distracted Herr Schachtner if you had played well.
Herr Schachtner put his hands together and clapped.
Ah, splendid child,
he exclaimed.
You are a true talent.
He turned to my father.
You are absolutely right, Leopold. She plays such smooth measures and with such control. I've no doubt she will perform for royalty when she is older.
My father thanked him politely at those words, but I could see the strain in his pride, the disappointment in his expression. Herr Schachtner was supposed to say more. He was supposed to be astounded. He should have extended an invitation to us, arranged for me to perform before Herr Haydn and Austria's other masters of music, offered to introduce me to his friends at court, suggested a grand tour to showcase me across all Europe.
Just think of the Italians,
he should have said.
A prodigy hailing from the Rome of the North, worthy of Rome herself.
But instead, what he said was,
when she is older.
I was not the miracle, destined to be noticed. Already the hare had moved on to telling my father a story about an argument between the orchestra's horns, my brother still bouncing on his knee. My performance was thoroughly forgotten. 6 weeks I had prepared for this. I felt the numb tingle return to my fingertips, and the shame of the note I'd let slip spilling out onto my cheeks. I never let notes slip. Later that night, after Papa had already retired to his chamber, I sat up in bed with my music notebook in my lap, the pages still open to the measures I'd played earlier in the day. As usual, Wolfril lay curled lengthwise at my side. I thought about pushing him away, but instead, I watched his chest rise and fall in a gentle rhythm, weighing my mood against the incessant complaints that I'd hear if I shook him out of sleep. I ran my fingers across the dried ink, replaying my performance in my mind. Finally, I closed it and placed it on my shelf, reaching instead for a round pendant I always kept nearby, its glass surface painted bright blue and black. Faint oil streaks lingered on its surface where my thumbs had rubbed away its glossy sheen. Mama noted my silence from where she was gathering up a few of Wolfril's toys on the floor. She sighed. Remember, Nunneral, your brother is only a child, she said to me. The skin under her eyes was soft and wrinkled, her hair a mixture of mahogany and silver. He does not know any better.
He knows what a performance means.
My eyes went to hers.
He distracted Herr Schachtner today. You saw him.
Mama smiled in sympathy, her eyes warm with understanding.
Ah, mein Liebling, he means no harm. You played very well today.
I looked back down at Wolfril. His face was flushed, his waves of brown curls in complete disarray. Mama was right, of course, and out of guilt, I reached over to smooth my brother's hair. He stirred, yawning like a pause between measures, his tongue tiny and pink.
"Can you tell me a story?"
he murmured, and pressed himself closer to me. Before I could answer, his breathing evened again into sleep. It was a request he made almost every day. Sharing stories with Vulfril was our constant game. We spun myths of elves and dwarves, chimera that emerged from the dark woods, gnomes guarding the sleeping emperor in the Untersberg mountain. But we told them to each other in secret, for Papa disapproved of them. At worst, they were stories about the devil's creatures, here to torment and tempt us. At best, they were fairy tale nonsense. Mama, however, indulged us with them. When I was very small, she used to gather me in her arms at night and whisper such stories to me in a hushed voice. After Vulfril came along and Papa complained about our mother filling our heads with fables, I became the one to tell them. They soon turned into something that belonged wholly to us. In this moment, his dreaming voice sounded so small, his question to me so true, that I felt my heart soften, as it always did, to him. Mama came over to sit with us on the edge of the bed. She glanced at the pendant in my hands that I kept rubbing. It had been my birthday present from her, a trinket acquired when she had visited our Uncle Franz in Augsburg. "To give you luck," she had told me with a kiss on each cheek. Now she looked on as I ran my fingers idly across its smooth surface. "Do you need good fortune so desperately?" Mama finally asked, taking my hand in hers. My hand tightened against the pendant. "Yes," I said.
"And what for, my little love?"
I paused for a moment and turned my eyes up to her. A silver wolf, Papa had once called her, for although my mother was as steady and graceful as the snow, she was also warm, her eyes alight with intelligence for those attentive enough to notice. It was the gaze of a survivor, a woman who had fought through poverty and debt and somehow carried on after the deaths of the 5 children who Vulfril and I had outlived. My own insecurities embarrassed me. How could I explain to her the feelings that pressed against my chest? My mother, who glided through every moment in her life with serenity and grace, who seemed to have faced every misfortune without fear.
"Mama," I finally said, "what are you afraid of?"
She laughed and leaned over to tap my nose. Her voice was full of vibrato, the music of a fine cello.
"I am afraid of the cold, little one, because it makes my bones ache. I am afraid when I hear stories of plague and war."
A graveness flickered in her gaze, as it often did when she thought of her childhood.
"I am afraid for you and Vulfril, as mothers always are."
She raised an eyebrow at me, and I felt myself drawn into her gaze.
"And you?"
My hands returned to the pendant, its black eye staring silently back up at me. I wondered if it could see into all the drawers and pockets of my father's mind, if it could tell me if I was still kept carefully in there. If I played poorly again, perhaps my father would lose interest altogether in teaching me. I thought of how the men had looked away from me after my performance today, how little the hare seemed to have heard of what I played.
"I am afraid of being forgotten," I said.
The truth emerged, fully formed, empowered somehow by being named.
"Forgotten?"
She laughed, a rich, throaty sound.
"What a fear for a little girl."
"Someday I won't be little anymore," I replied.
Mama sobered at the words of an old soul emerging from her daughter's lips.
"Everyone is forgotten, mein Liebling," she said gently. "Except the kings and queens."
"And the talented," I added in silence, studying my brother's dark curls. They were words my father had once said. Only the worthy are made immortal. With a sigh, Mama leaned toward me and kissed me gently on my cheek.
You will have plenty of years to weigh yourself down with such thoughts. Tonight, love, let yourself sleep.
She turned her back and closed the door behind her, leaving us alone. I stared at the door that Mama had just stepped through, then turned to look out at the dark city through our window. In that moment, I made a wish. Help me be worthy. Worthy of praise, of being loved and remembered. Worthy of attention when I bared my heart at the clavier. Worthy enough for my music to linger long after I was gone. Worthy of my father. Make them remember me. The thought trailed through my mind in a circle. I saw myself seated at the bench again, this time with the hair never turning away in distraction, my father looking on with pride, the web in the woods unbroken and perfect. I let the image linger so long that when I finally went to sleep, I could still see it imprinted behind my closed eyes. I thought no one heard my secret prayer, not even God, who seemed to have little interest in the wants of small girls. But someone was listening. That night, I dreamed of a shore lit by twin moons, each bright as a diamond, both suspended low at the water's edge. Their images were mirrored perfectly against a still ocean. The line of a dark forest curved along the horizon. The shore sand was very white, the seashells very blue, and through the curling seafoam walked a boy. He looked like a wild child, clad in nothing more than black bark and silver leaves, twigs entangled in his hair, a flash of pearly white teeth brightening his smile. And although he was too far away for me to make out his features, his eyes glowed, the blue of them reflected against his cheeks. The air around him rippled with a melody so perfect, so unlike anything I had ever heard, that I woke with my hand outstretched before me, aching to grasp it. That was the first time I ever saw the Kingdom of Bach.